And now we'll thank you for your presentation and move on to our agenda item 3, where we'll have the Oregon State University College of Forestry Dean's Initiative Program. Thanks for coming.
Having me. All right. Good morning, Chair Imason, Board of Forestry members, State Forestry Doherty. I'm Anthony Davis. I serve as the interim dean of the College of Forestry at Oregon State University, and it's a pleasure to be in front of you today to share a brief update on some of our leading teaching, research, and extension activities. Rarely would I give out the PowerPoint in advance if I were teaching a class. So this is a little bit terrifying, and I'm going to watch to make sure that nobody's cheating and looking ahead. really just running through, I thought I'd start by giving a brief overview of where we are in the college right now, talking about some of our education programs. We offer degrees in forestry, forest engineering, natural resources, renewable materials, tourism, recreation, and adventure leadership. All of those, somehow this is clicking ahead on its own. Okay. All of this is, all of these are our undergraduate degree programs, and they are designed to, okay, I'm not going to touch anything because I have a technology curse this morning, apparently. I could try to talk faster and keep up with the slideshow, but I'm worried about trying to do that too. So our undergraduate degree programs are absolutely vital. And I was talking with a group last week about how right now we're sort of at the intersection of two crises. We're facing a climate crisis and we're facing a sustainability crisis. And in many ways, a College of Forestry is positioned directly at the middle of those. We're training students to understand the impact of changing climate on our ecosystems, the impact of those changes on our ability to produce products that we need, at the same time as we're looking at our need for urban renewal, our need for growth, to be dependent on sustainably grown materials. And with wood being the only primary building material that we can actually grow, the use of forestry in its biggest definition to meet some of these pending crises is absolutely critical. I do believe our undergraduate students see that as the opportunity and see that as the reason why they would go into one of these degree programs. Some of these degrees are much more general in their field. Some of them are very specific. Training foresters has a lot of technical capacity built through a rigid curriculum. Our natural resources degree is much more general. It allows for a student to pick the pathway that makes the most sense for them. That could lead to a field in natural resources, conservation law enforcement. It could lead to a career working to advise forest industry on meaningful outreach in communities. That is the root of why we have a College of Forestry, training students to lead in future generations, informing them with science through their classes so that they're able to use that same set of knowledge to be able to drive change in the next generation. At the graduate level, we have about 200 graduate students, and these students are from all around the world doing master's degrees in both thesis and non-thesis tracks, PhDs. I didn't touch anything, so just for the record. It's still going ahead. So our graduate students often go on to, it's not distracting at all to have the slideshow advance. Just in case anyone was wondering if that's distracting, the answer is, oh no, not at all. So I'm going to sit like this for a few minutes while I... this was the trick question, actually. Will you have a PowerPoint was one of the questions that I was asked. And in hindsight, I probably should have said, no, I won't. So our graduate students are leaders. And they've at the master's level, of course, are developing the scientific knowledge and understanding how to critically ask questions. at the PhD level, many of our graduates go on to teach. And at one point I counted, and 3/4 of the forestry programs in North America had an Oregon State University PhD grad on their faculty. When you think about the cascading impact that that means our college has on every reach of the practice of forestry across the United States, it's a tremendous impact. It's like we're sitting in a bar and there's a sporting event right there, and you're trying to have a conversation and not look at the score in the football game or something. So, yes, that's right. It's your favorite team. It's the Boilermakers actually have a chance of winning a game or something for me. So, okay. So, having our students be able to come through and not just take courses, not just do research that matters as graduate students, not just learn from world-class faculty and instructors, not just be really well advised, but also to have meaningful hands-on experience is one of the areas we've been really growing the college. And so our current mentored employment program is an area where we're pushing to have our students get experience in a wide range of fields. That could be working in a chemistry lab, it could be working on our research forest, it could be working outside in the field doing data collection. The mentored employment program serves as an excellent complement to our undergraduate degrees. It provides students with income. It provides them with income in a place where they're also using the knowledge that they're developing in the classes that they're taking. Right now, the majority of our students are in the natural resources undergraduate degree program. And in a moment, I'll show how that growth has really occurred. That's the generalist program that I mentioned. We see relatively stable program size in all of our other degrees. We need to grow enrollment in those programs. Our students are in demand when they finish their degrees. And going back to the what is the role of a graduate of the College of Forestry in today's landscape, these are vital positions to have. We need students who have had access to leading education that they get from a College of Forestry like ours. So over the past decade, you can see pretty tremendous growth in the natural resources program. And one significant driver behind that program is available through our eCampus network, which means that those students could be in Oregon, they could be in New York, they could be in Florida. All of the students are presently domestic in that program, but they're choosing Oregon State because of our reputation as a natural resources leader. To me, the next step with that is to be able to identify how do we grow this network of alumni who have come through to provide informed feedback to us on how do we continue to change. How do we evolve this degree so that we see more impact in communities, on forested landscapes, in managing towards these future conditions, managing for uncertainty. Actually, back one, sorry. That one. All of the other lines are relatively flat. And in an academic institution, that's not necessarily something you want to see. We are supposed to be in a growth mindset. We've changed our recruiting strategy to focus much more on face-to-face, less on digital. We still have a strong digital presence. But one of the things that we know about students who enter forestry programs is that they like to talk about it. They like to hear about it. We have some name recognition issues. I was recently told that if someone were to look at all of the areas of interest of college applicants, the word renewable materials shows up never. And so when you rebrand a degree to have the name renewable materials, and applicants don't know to apply for it, it may well be that we've done that partly to ourselves. Using data as a tool, we can actually look to see, are there students who are really interested in knowing where we're going to get sustainable building materials from and how to maximize a series of values off the landscape in providing those materials, including clean air and water, vital habitat. To me, these are the issues that I hear high school students talking about, and I hear college students talking about. And the fact that we have a degree that has no name recognition is likely a blocker towards recruitment. So armed with this new data-minded approach and an in-person, on-the-ground way to talk about things, I'm optimistic about our ability to get students who want these degrees into these degrees. Once they're there, they're supported by a tremendous level of scholarship support and a very dedicated and well-trained advising team, and they have the opportunity to learn from leading faculty. I'll also point out that last year, almost a quarter of our students were first-generation college students in the College of Forestry. And that's absolutely vital as we look at continuing to renew Oregon's landscapes and rural economies, that students are able to enter college, that we can advise them, teach them, train them, provide mentored employment programs, and let them return to their home communities with this new set of knowledge. Jobs accepted before you graduate. This is one of those metrics that's interesting to me and definitely is interesting to a lot of parents of our students. So you can see some of these programs, renewable materials, forest engineering, forestry. Most of the students have accepted a job or have had multiple job offers even before they graduate from the degree. Our natural resource program and our tourism, recreation, and adventure leadership program, those are much lower placement rates. Some of that is driven by students who are not as dedicated to a specific career path. They're looking at options. And some of it is that these are relatively new degrees for us, and we need to identify how do we have a better flow of graduating students into a workplace where they have that rewarding career. Moving on a little bit to our research programs, the Institute for Working Forest Landscapes is the umbrella program that I'm sure many of you have heard our college talk about. And someone recently asked me, well, what is this idea of connecting healthy ecosystems, healthy people, healthy communities, and healthy businesses? What does it look like? And I took that very literally and had our team come up with this graphic, which to me is a continuum, where we can't talk about healthy urban renewal and urban growth strategies without asking the vital question, where are we going to get the building materials? And for me, in my lifetime, the world's wood consumption has increased by about 50%. Steel consumption has tripled over that time. We are consumers of raw materials, and we always have been, we always will be. Now is the vital, critical time for us to make sure that we ask, where do these materials come from? How did we get them? How long will they last? What are the benefits or costs associated with using these different materials? And that allows us to push across and see, well, if we have urban renewal recognizing that some of these materials can be grown here in Oregon, very much paralleling the farm-to-table movement of the forest-to-frame idea, where we can sustainably grow our forests to provide the materials we need for building bridges, parking garages, sports stadiums, concert halls, or university buildings, that's going to put jobs back into our communities, and it's going to sustain the jobs that we have in places where we don't see a tech boom, in places where we don't see the opportunity for a major expansion of ecotourism type activities. We know that having jobs in those communities is critical for people to be able to maintain healthy lives. And those healthy lives include the ability to support a family, as we see the expanding impact of the opioid crisis across Oregon and the relationship that has with unemployment rates. This is all part of that same continuum. And maybe there are branches in and out, there are off-ramps, but it all starts with having healthy ecosystems. And our healthy ecosystems include working forests that provide these multiple values in perpetuity that can shift based on societal demands. That is the overarching framework of why we have a research program in the College of Forestry. That drives our hiring decisions, that drives our curricula, it drives the very grants that our faculty are able to bring in. It ties to the fire issues that we are so concerned about every day. It ties to the clean water issues that we don't spend enough time thinking about. To me, this is what positions our university to maintain its place as a contemporary leader in forestry education, research, and outreach. Next slide. Getting to a bit more of a nuts and bolts level or utility pole level, maybe, we have research cooperatives. And this is actually another vital way of connecting, where we want our industry partners, our federal partners, our state partners to have access to cutting edge information. And we see members across our 10 different research cooperatives who bring new information to the table drive us towards asking specific questions so that we can actually be innovating internally. And I have this back and forth of feedback as we look to provide scientific leadership. One of the really exciting advances that we've had is the recent completion of the Red Emerson Advanced Wood Products Laboratory. And I'll talk a little bit more about our overall construction project soon, but this is a 15,000 square foot laboratory that would allow us to build a mock-up of a three-story building and put it under extreme stress. And as we think about, again, that idea of urban renewal and the need to understand shifting building codes, shifting material availabilities, our desire to build in, our need to continue to build in earthquake-prone zones, and understanding not just how can we build a building safely to withstand an earthquake, but how can you minimize the costs of reoccupying it after an earthquake? Learning from the lessons that we've unfortunately had in places like Christchurch, where buildings didn't fall down, but they were not safe for reoccupancy. You end up seeing a city like that have to move its entire urban core. Through a new research lab like this and the next 25 years of projects that will go on inside of it, we will better be able to make decisions to help our small and large cities and towns in Oregon not have to have that same problem happen. The Fish and Wildlife Habitat and Managed Forest Program is an internally funded program in the college, and this is part of our Forest Research Laboratory. Every year we award more than $250,000 in project support. That support goes both to College of Forestry faculty as well as to key partners in the Department of Fish and Wildlife and in the U.S. Forest Service. This year's active projects include the development of native bee identification keys for the Pacific Northwest, assessing the response of aquatic biota to alternative riparian management practices, number of projects on early cereal habitat, and understanding the relationship between avian occupancy and management decisions that we make in our forests. These projects cycle through with a number of presentations, and again, providing that ability for our faculty to partner across the state and use this often as seed money to be able to look for more funding opportunities, develop that initial data set that's needed to provide a long-term compelling research program. And on the wood products side, I was in Prineville the other day and I was thinking about juniper quite a bit for obvious reasons. And so seeing projects like this that push to bring design values in juniper online so that it can be a wood that's used more regularly in commercial projects is absolutely critical. Obviously, the wood properties of juniper are really interesting. The growth attributes of juniper are less desirable in terms of a management standpoint. And yet we have the ability to continue to innovate. We have to look at the opportunities to be able to reduce juniper encroachment and do that in a cost-effective way. So seeing the design values come online allows this to be used in a number of new ways moving forward, not just for making gin or non-timber products. Some of you may have heard a little bit about the Elliott State Forest. Come up in the news once or twice over the past few years, I believe. So, as I think you know, we've looked to present this with the idea of a research forest. And what our agreement with the Department of State Lands is right now is to have our own internal exploratory committee look to see, is there a compelling reason for this particular piece of land to become a research forest? What would that be? Because for an 82,005-acre piece of forest to be dedicated to something like research, it has to take advantage of scale. And I've spoken on this a lot, so I'll try to be brief, which sometimes I fail at. But our initial charge was, what would the theme be? If we were to conduct research on a forest of this scale, how do you absorb the scale? Because if it's just doing 82,000-acre plots, then really it's no different than having 1,000-acre woodlots, research forests. So for us, we've had this wonderful dialogue and really come up with the idea of, we are at a point in time where now and into the future, we have to find a way to balance conservation, production, and livelihood objectives on a forested landscape in a changing world. And that change, that world change, that word change is a really interesting one. Because not only are we seeing changing climatic conditions, we're seeing changing social conditions at a tremendous rate. We're seeing different values, a request for different values to be magnified on some parts of our landscape that weren't there before. We're seeing a change in how we could potentially value all sorts of phases of forest development, forest growth. We look at carbon, we look at water, we look at habitat, we look at timber products, we look at recreation. All of those can be critical in how a forest is viewed. Overall, a research forest of this scale could look to sustain yield and find different pathways to amplify other values and quantify those trade-offs over a 5, 10, 25, 50, even 100-year time frame. And where I see this going is knowing that the questions that are coming at us and all of us in society, they're not going to get easier. There is no one who's sweeping in with a cape, coming in, flying in, and saving the day. So really, it's going to be, what are the questions we need to start asking now so we have answers that can meaningfully inform decision-making in 10 years, 25 years, 100 years? Because every time we're not setting ourselves up to answer those questions, we're a year later in our ability to answer them. And we're a year further down this changing timeline, changing landscape. So this process has been moving forward with a tremendous amount of faculty engagement, public consultation, tribal engagement, a lot of dialogue at every possible level. And what I've really encouraged our team to do is to not worry, really not think about the how could we make it happen. And instead focus on what could it be? Because if ultimately we decide that there is no compelling story that could be told through a research program on this forest, then we should probably not move forward. And that's the decision really we have to make heading into our December land board meeting. We'll have a bunch more information sessions and conversations around this as we move into the fall. But overall, the process has been truly rewarding and actually something that we've learned from in how we will manage some of our conversations and dialogues about all of our current forest properties. In terms of outreach and extension, one of the areas we built on last year in Portland, we hosted a fire summit with many leading partners, including ODF and partners from all across the West. We had a slightly condensed and more focused version of this in DC this year, with the idea of focusing on three main themes: defining the fire reality and understanding the impacts on water, forests, and society, a conversation around the efficacy and scalability of fuel treatments to address current and future wildfires, and then trying to delve more deeply into smoke and human impacts and the implications of that current reality and what is our new future on how we perceive smoke. And I know that's an issue that you've all dealt with regularly, continuing to see more and more engagement around this and more partners coming to the table with meaningful, powerful suggestions that I think can get us to a place where even when we don't have a good fire year, we're still able to make the decisions that we need to improve conditions and improve health conditions in particular for our most vulnerable populations. One of my favorite activities at the college hosts is the Get Outdoors Day. And this is a free event on our nearby PV Arboretum. And the idea is really all about first-time visitors. And there's a lot of logistics into getting first-time visitors into a forest. This year we had over 400 people participate. And really what we see, again, is that our forest users are older, whiter than our population. We need to get young people of all backgrounds, all experience types, into the forest at an early age. Not to convince them to end up 10 years later coming in as one of my new recruits into the college, which I'd be happy if they did, but more to help understand what is this amazing resource that we have here in Oregon. How can every citizen in Oregon be part of a stewardship brigade of our forest communities and ecosystems? On our research forest, we have currently 15,000 acres of forests, and those are spread across the state. They're dedicated towards advancing the college's research mission and supporting the college's education and outreach missions. Earlier this summer, we harvested a stand of trees on the McDonald Forest, just outside of Corvallis, that unfortunately included some of the older trees that we have in our forest. And in a forensic approach of how did we get to that point where it happened, it was pretty clear this was a mistake on our part, that those trees, in my opinion, and I speak for the college, should not have been harvested. And that we unfortunately did not have a system in place that allowed for us to say, if we have trees of unique age or character, how do we determine whether they should be excluded from a harvest? And that led to an immediate moratorium on harvesting of trees 160 years or older. 160 years is an important age in our research forest, the McDonald Research Forest, because roughly these lands that the McDonald Dunn Research Forest are on were the traditional homeland of the Kalapuya. And roughly 160 years ago, they were forcibly removed to reservations. And you can think about the transformative change that had on our forest landscape. And so that provides an important time step that we have to recognize in terms of tree ages that we currently have. We also are now in a place where we've initiated some public dialogue sessions, and we had our first one a couple of weeks ago. We'll have another in early October, as we look to begin a more robust forest planning process for all of our forest properties. And that's a two-step process that will include a overview umbrella statement of vision and mission and purpose for having research forests, but then also individual tactical management plans for each of our forests. We'll push to have faculty and student input, as well as stakeholder and community input based around each of those forests. The PV Forest Science Center, or PV Hall, for any of you who have an OSU forestry background. This is a quote from one of our recent graduates. The new building will help everyone see that Oregon State is interested in sustainable forestry, that it's something valued and something that has international influence. This building is beautiful, and we will have classes here in spring term. We are now at a spot where we're working on room assignments. We've moved through all the growing pains of a construction project like this, and labs are starting to be finished. We had a faculty tour recently, and as one of our leading scientists said to me, I'm really going to have to up my research game to justify having this lab, which is a great thing to hear. The building is designed to showcase not just Oregon wood, but Oregon's forest history. It's also a testament to engineering and scientific creativity, to the future that we can have if we look to use these materials that we are so fortunate to have access to in innovative ways. I wanted to personally invite the entire board for a tour, and I'll reach out to see if you're interested. We can schedule something like that. In my mind, it would be great to get you in before construction is finished, because there are some raw elements to the construction that I think resonate with how complicated a project this is, how important a project this is for a university to be in the leadership position, showing how we can use a wood structure to advance construction design. So the other, one other thing that I wanted to touch briefly on was, we are in the midst of a search for a dean of the College of Forestry. And right now we're scheduled to have applicants, candidates for that position on campus in mid-October. Those dates, of course, could shift on scheduling availability for individuals. But that's we're at the space where the search committee is working on video interviews or Skype interviews with potential candidates, and then the finalists will be brought in October. And it's not just the dean position that we see a significant change in personnel. There's 6 recently hired or open searches right now that we have in the college. We've recently hired new faculty members in biodeterioration and advanced manufacturing, in forest policy, and in fish and wildlife habitat. And we have 2 searches open now, one in global change in forested biomes and one in carbon cycling. This sort of cohort of new faculty coming in allows us to continue to focus on renewal of our programs, have people in the classrooms giving that cutting edge education to those students, and partner with our leading faculty that we already have to continue to evolve, find new directions, and provide healthy ecosystems, healthy people, healthy businesses, and healthy communities moving forward. Thank you.
Thanks very much. That was really a great presentation. Are there questions or comments from board members?
Yeah, I do. So, and thanks. That was great. I really, really enjoyed that presentation. I would love to see PV before it's finished. I would love to see, I mean, like what you suggested. And if we can definitely try to make that happen, I don't know, Chair, how that would transpire. But I think that would be really valuable to see that before it's done.
What's the window of opportunity for that?
So this fall would be ideal. And we can, I'll reach out directly and we can see if there's a date or even a couple of dates that might work, and we can get people in.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Great. Thanks again. And now we will take a break until... we'll take a 15-minute break, so we're going to come back at 11:05.